Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Got an exciting week of podcasts for you. Later on this week, on Wednesday, we are recording the Pixar podcast part two, where Skylar and I will be joined by none other than B-Mort, Brian Mortensen, who will come to defend the Good Dinosaur. We all saw it over the weekend. So that's coming later. But before then, today, we bring back Aaron from Los Angeles, California, to talk all about Spotlight.
Hi, buddy. How you doing, David?
Good, man. How you doing?
Pretty good. I just wanted to say thank you for inviting me to talk about this uplifting comedy called Spotlight. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Really, it was quite a lighthearted romp.
Well, yeah. I mean, I would actually call it a popcorn flick, but that's just me.
Yeah, not for anyone who wants to, like, think while they're watching a movie.
Just sit back,
get your popcorn, get your rosary beads, and enjoy.
Yeah. Completely disposable film, I'd say. You don't even think about it for 1 second when you leave that theater.
This is the type of movie that if they actually did a remake 2 years from now, I would welcome it.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. I was actually hoping for a series of these movies.
Oh, man. Okay. I love Spotlight. And we're going to get into that. We're going to go point by point. I wanted, though, before we jump into Spotlight, is do a quick recap on that Scorsese pod we did, that marathon of an episode.
That was a mammoth beast, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But you know what? Scorsese deserves that.
Yeah, you know what? I actually went back and listened, mainly because I like to hear my own voice.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I went back and listened, and I felt like there were so many things that I didn't mention that I wanted to.
Isn't that crazy? In an hour and 40 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. Scorsese, I mean, I could talk about the guy every day. He's one of the greatest. That's all you can say about him.
No, and we really will do a part two eventually, really. A year or two from now. I mean, obviously he'll have another film. I'm not sure what that will be. He'll have another film out by then. Do you know what he's currently working on? I actually have no idea.
I believe it's this Frank Sinatra biopic. Oh. That's the last thing that I saw.
Is that with DiCaprio, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, it's gonna be fun to see
about that. Yeah.
DiCaprio learned to sing. Like, do you think that for Leo, do you think that, like, it even crosses mind to be like, you know what? I'm not even going to try and portray the greatest singer, like, of this generation, generation, like, of all time.
The greatest crooner.
The greatest crooner, yeah, there it is, of all
without
time.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I feel like he's self-aware enough where he doesn't think that he can pull that off. I hope, at least.
Right?
Because that would just be silly.
There was a time when they were making the Steve Jobs film that there were so many cycles of people, like, you know, Fincher was going to direct it at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian Bale was going to be Steve Jobs, which I actually think he probably would have done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And then at one point it was Marty Scorsese with Leonardo DiCaprio. And that was the one kind of version that I was like, please don't make this movie.
Yeah. I feel like that might not have worked.
I don't think so.
I didn't actually see the last Steve Jobs. I haven't seen any of the Steve Jobs movies. Oh, so
okay,
I know that hurts you personally, but
well, look, I can
just
tell
not
you,
really interested.
We have three great full-length Steve Jobs movies. We have an 80-minute Funny or Die skit that's about 79 minutes too long, starring Justin Long. I kid you not, it's 80 minutes long. It's a Funny or Die produced piece. We've got the Ashton Kutcher masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And then we have we have this little tiny flick with Danny Boyle directed with Michael Fassbender. But
and actually, how'd that one do at the box office?
Not good. Like when they had this weird rollout where they, like, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon to do limited release and then expand movie, but they did a really bizarre, like, a little bit bigger rollout next week, a few hundred more theaters next week. And they were hoping the word of mouth, because it got such good reviews, right? They're hoping word of mouth would help propel it, and it didn't. It bombed pretty bad in the domestic box office.
Wow.
Which is too bad for a movie that I think is great. It's one of the best movies of the year.
At some point I will see it. And you know what, actually, upon thinking about this just for a second, I did see Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Oh, that counts.
Which,
yeah,
that counts.
That
that's
totally
a Steve
counts.
Jobs movie,
not a theatrical release.
I'd say it's probably better. I mean, Anthony Michael Hall is Bill Gates. That's perfect casting as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, my gosh.
Was that a TV movie? Yeah, that was a TV
movie. Yeah, totally. Oh, my gosh. Those TV movies, especially those HBO ones, like, have you seen The Late Shift?
Oh, yeah. I certainly have. That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
The thing is, I actually like The Late Shift, but it's also there's just a certain element that's just ridiculous.
Well, how about the fact that they put the false chin on the actor that played Jay Leno?
Exactly.
And the chin is about 6 inches long.
Oh, it's a total caricature chin. Like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, back on the Scorsese pod, we had a couple tweets that I did actually want to bring up to your attention. One, a longtime listener, Michael Perkins, who I'm grateful he listens to the pod, even though he mostly disagrees with my takes. Like, actually, all the time. He loves Sicario, so we agreed there, but him and I usually disagree, and he lets me know.
So he's not a complete idiot then.
No, he lets me know on Twitter fairly often, sometimes in a civil way, sometimes not so civil, but I welcome all tweets. But he did tweet in saying that he was digging the Scorsese pod and that he's glad The Departed got some love after a previous haterific tweet that I had sent regarding the film. That's amazing. A Scorsese film that I hate still made my cracked number five.
Yeah, you're such a hater. Yeah, couldn't believe it.
But
The Departed definitely deserves praise. So
yeah, no, yeah.
Good on you for including
that. You rewatched it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. After we got through after we finished the podcast, The Departed was on. So I actually sat down and watched it again. And it's a solid film. It really is.
Yeah, no. You just got to fast forward through the Jack Nicholson parts.
I took the bathroom break during those scenes.
And then a friend of the pod, Kevin, he tweeted in that, quote, just watched The Last Waltz after listening to the Scorsese pod. You need to watch it, David. Wow.
Yes.
So he took your recommendation.
Good job, Kevin. Yes.
Yeah.
That's the tweeter of the day right there. Can we give him some sort of a prize?
Yeah. Well, this is what's great is that you can make a recommendation like The Last Waltz, a movie that like I had was not on my radar, right? And you bring it up and people actually watch it and are able to discover movies they otherwise wouldn't have. And I don't know if Kevin knew much about the Last Waltz before the pod. I certainly didn't. And so it's cool to see him go out and watch it. And really, clearly, he loved it.
Yeah, and that's interesting because Scorsese is such a high-profile director. And there are films that just don't get the recognition today that they deserve.
Yeah.
I think The Last Waltz is one of those films. So good on you, Kevin.
So I did purchase over the weekend, King of Comedy. So
good.
I've got the digital file. And purchased might be a euphemism.
Now, I want to make sure that you got the King of Comedy and not the Kings of Comedy with Bernie Mac.
No, I have the one with Cedric the Entertainer.
Oh, perfect. That's it.
I started watching it and I thought, I know Scorsese likes the F word, but this is a little salty.
Both equally great films.
Anyway, I have the film in my possession. I look forward to watching it. Recently, though, in preparation for our Reservoir pods that we'll record, I found out just before the podcast you're not getting my text messages, which means you probably didn't get my text on Sunday asking if you're still down to do Reservoir pods.
I missed that one.
All those my texts are still getting rerouted to Fiji. So I've been catching up, refreshing on the Tarantino flicks that I haven't seen recently. And then also watching scenes because I really want to have like craft a five scenes I feel good about because turns out, surprise, Tarantino has hundreds of good scenes.
Mm-hmm.
This
is true. And this is the real dilemma. I would say every one of his movies has at least four or five timeless scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Some are better than others, obviously. But yeah, I also started to go back and rewatch some of the older Tarantino's the films that I haven't seen in a long time. And they just jump out at you.
Well,
I can't wait to do that one. So
the one for me that's been insane to rewatch because I've only seen it once and it was a long time ago and I didn't have like a positive memory of it and that was Jackie Brown.
Wait, you didn't like Jackie Brown?
No, I shouldn't. That sounded too strong. It wasn't among my favorites. I was kind of like, yeah, it had its moments, but it wasn't one of my favorites, right? Like I liked it certainly better than Death Proof. Grindhouse, but like it wasn't going to make my top five. And you know, he's only made seven films. So, I was watching scenes and I was reminded of the movie, but also some of the scenes I didn't even remember them. So I was like, yeah, I got to watch this. So I purchased the movie and I've watched the first half and it is so good. Like,
it's excellent. It is an excellent film.
Good. Robert De Niro. Well, of course, Samuel Jackson's good in all of these Tarantino ones, but Samuel Jackson in particular, even Chris Tucker with his bit part,
his role is vital to the film, and he steals the scenes that he's in. Yeah. I mean, he's so good in it. It's crazy. So it makes you wish that Chris Tucker did more dramatic roles. Although his role wasn't really dramatic, he was just he was kind of the comic relief in a dramatic film. Yeah. It's too bad that he hasn't done more stuff like that.
Yeah, just The Fifth Element. Anyway, Jackie Brown. I haven't even finished my rewatch, and I'm already like telling people like, hey, if you like Tarantino, for whatever reason, Tarantino people, especially in my age range, skip over Jackie Brown. I think people see like the genre as blaxploitation and think like, oh, it's probably not for me. But I think people probably misunderstand what that means.
It's so good. Yeah, I mean, also it came right after Pulp Fiction. Yeah. So it was not as heralded as Pulp Fiction. Right. I mean, Pulp Fiction, how do you follow that up? It doesn't matter what you do, it's going to be disappointing.
Right.
I think Jackie Brown is a great film.
It's got
infinitely rewatchable for me.
Yeah. There's already a scene that I know for sure is going to be in my top five when we do regular pods. But I'm still in research mode, so even though I say for sure, I'm really trying to craft a good list. But
yeah, you still have four more movies to rewatch.
So. Do I have to watch both parts of Kill Bill, or can I just watch one?
Hey, the New Beverly just released their December schedule. Yeah. And so I think it's the final two weekends of December. They're doing the full-on Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, the back-to-back.
Oh.
I forget what it's called, The Bloody Affair or something like that.
Yeah.
So they're doing the full-on Bloody Affair.
Wow.
And I hope to get tickets to that, because that's something that I've been looking forward to see in the theaters for a long time. So
yeah, well,
Inglorious 35mm.
Oh yeah, totally. Is Quentin Tarantino at the New Beverly? Is Quentin Tarantino gonna live stream him watching every one of his movies? Because I would buy a full price movie ticket to see that.
I wish that were the case, but I don't think so.
Because as much as I love Tarantino, I need to see his reaction to his Australian accent in Django Unchained, because where Tarantino has otherwise been pretty decent in acting, that part left something to be desired.
Have you seen his part in the movie Four Rooms?
No.
It's kind of like a vignette movie.
Yeah. I watched it on YouTube. Yeah. I watched it on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's widely panned, that movie. The anthology, whatever it is.
Yeah. And so he's his acting in that, and his part is pretty bad.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad. Yeah. People try to defend him, but it's terrible. He's not a good actor at all.
No, he's not. But that's the thing. He doesn't need to be, even though he was fine in Pulp Fiction, right? Like he was funny, and he had his, you know. But and he obviously was great in, you know, I actually think he was pretty good in Reservoir Dogs. But but the guy is expert at directing and writing. You know, you don't need.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Be, that, so actually, I was going to ask you that question. Do you think he's a better writer or a better director?
I would say that, oh man, that's a really good question. His writing is so stylized that it's a little one note.
You're going that direction. Okay.
I love it for what it is.
Right.
But I feel like sometimes he has characters that are talking in his voice.
Yes.
And they don't have their own voice. They're talking like he talks.
Okay.
Which works. But I personally feel like he's a better director probably than a better writer.
Interesting. Okay. Because I've never seen True Romance all the way through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was watching a bunch of clips on YouTube from like the first half of the film, which I've seen, and so I purchased the film, and I'll be watching that as well as part of the Tarantino pod, because I think that should be considered for scenes, because he wrote the film.
Oh, there's no doubt. That's, you definitely have to include that, I would say.
So
as well as his episode of ER that he directed.
and his scene in what is it, Sin City, or was that Robert Rodriguez? I don't remember. Anyway,
was he? I don't remember. Yeah,
I think he did
remember.
One scene actually, but yeah. So this has already turned into a Tarantino pod. The man just takes over. So let's get into Spotlight. This is give some context on Spotlight. This is the film about the 2001 Boston Globe kind of deep dive journalism team called Spotlight, and how they're the ones that initially broke what was a local story in terms of the Catholic priest molestation scandal, and then that essentially ignited a worldwide scandal, and it all started with the Spotlight team for the Boston Globe. And so the film takes place in 2001. It kind of covers those events. We obviously know what happens going in, so it's one of those, you know, historical dramas where you know the result, but that doesn't mean that it packs any less of a punch.
No, and I think that's the mark of a great it's the mark of a great true story drama. Mm-hmm. Is when you know the result and it's still powerful, like this movie is. This movie doesn't pull any punches. It lays it all out there, and it's hard to watch at times.
Yeah.
But it's riveting, man. You're on the edge of your seat, even though it's just these people that are looking up. They're basically just looking up names. They're going through yearbooks. It's really interesting how they found, how they collected the data or the information on the priests. I mean, this was the Catholic Church that was putting out an annual. It was like a yearbook, basically. And they got all their, they were able to cross-reference where these priests were supposed to be at the time, where they're out on supposed sick leave or reassigned. And it's really fascinating how they were to put they were able to put the connect the dots in those situations. The movie starts off the Boston Globe is bringing in a new editor. Excuse me, someone from out of town, an outsider, and which is really important because from what I understand, I've never been to Boston, but from everything that I've seen in movies, Boston is it's incredibly tight-knit, and and unless you're a local, you're gonna be rejected in some sense. And so they bring in this outsider, and he kind of makes waves, and he pursues a story that no one wants to touch. And it makes you think, what would have happened if the Boston Globe didn't bring in this new editor?
Seriously.
Would this story have ever broken? Because the pieces were already there, but everyone ignored them. That's what we come to find out in the journey.
Yep.
Well, I thought...
it's made all the more amazing because, like, there were clearly and obviously there were scandals. This stuff was happening all around the world. But the fact that the news would break in the most heavily Catholic city in the United States. Like, sure, I guess you could make an argument for, like, maybe there's a higher volume of the incidents happening, but still, they had all the more reasons, that paper, to not kind of go against the church in which over 60% of their readership was a member of, you know?
Right.
Which is one of the reasons why they hadn't been going after them this whole time. And there is money involved here, right? Like, there's, you know, and there's relationships and, like, you know, people have just been kind of putting it, you know, subconsciously or consciously.
Right.
They've been really just kind of brushing off to the side until, you know, you have the heroic Jew played by Lee Schreiber.
Exactly.
Really, though. Like
the Christ figure, if you will. So what I thought was interesting
not being
is...
Catholic isn't important, you know.
Right. It's vital to the story. What I found interesting was that, and they show this... in one of the meetings that Michael Keaton's character has, there isn't necessarily a heavy hand from the Catholic Church. There's more of an understanding.
Yeah.
You just don't do it.
You just don't do it.
You just don't go against them. So it's not like there's these armed thugs hanging out outside your door. It's just you know that you're not supposed to do this. Don't go down that avenue. Yeah. So.
Well, that's what's crazy too, is we're talking about a religion, right? So for the most part, there's not going to be armed thugs. It's going to instead be, well, God is on our side. You don't want to go against God, right? Like that's the dynamic we're dealing with.
Yep.
So you get this outsider, new editor at the Boston Globe comes in and says, why haven't we dug more into this? Let's put the Spotlight team on it, right? And Spotlight team is led by an editor played by Michael Keaton. honestly, I mentioned earlier I love the movie Steve Jobs. I actually didn't think I would see an ensemble cast that I thought was more impressive than Steve Jobs, because between Jeff Daniels, Kate Winslet, Michael Fassbender, Seth Rogen, it has a really, really, really incredible cast. Spotlight, top to bottom, is unbelievable. This is the best cast, the best ensemble cast of the year. I don't think there's any question. The question is who's going to win the Oscars? This was incredible.
Like, everyone was on their A game for this one. It was amazing to see Rachel McAdams and Mark Ruffalo.
Her best role ever.
I feel like Michael Keaton deserves the best actor for this. So I don't know if there's going to be a better performance.
This is what's crazy is, first off, who's the lead? I actually don't know.
I don't know.
Any one of the, I think you can make an argument for both Michael Keaton or Mark Ruffalo as a lead. Mm-hmm. Certainly probably more Michael Keaton. But all of them could also be supporting. I mean, this isn't dominated by necessarily one person. It spreads it around. The film is very even in terms of who it's following. But Mark Ruffalo gives the best performance, I think, in the film, which is amazing. He immediately embodies this character. And I don't even know, I have no clue if this is what the guy was like in real life, but it doesn't even matter because it's not Mark Ruffalo on the screen. And it's amazing to me.
There isn't 1 second where you look at him and you think, wow, that's Mark Ruffalo playing someone from Boston.
Yeah, exactly. So. Right. No, and it's really incredible. He has one of the most powerful scenes in the film, maybe I think my favorite scene in the film, and it's in the trailer, unfortunately, but the whole, you know, this could have been any one of us. So powerful. Like it, and he just,
I don't know. Why would they waste that in the trailer, by the way?
So dumb. Oh,
that's crazy.
It's such a good scene.
Oh. Can we just mention Stanley Tucci for a second? Yeah,
so Stanley Tucci is the next one, right?
So
Stanley Tucci is getting the best. He's getting nominated for Best Supporting Actor, right? That's a foregone.
He has to.
Yeah.
He absolutely has to. Yes. That was the performance of his career.
Yes.
I mean, wow.
Yeah. Stanley Tucci is incredible. He plays the attorney that represents the victims of the scandals. And he's like this kind of guy that's like slightly unhinged. And he's literally kind of like, I don't have time for anyone. Because there are thousands of people that have been molested that I need to represent. Mm-hmm. Like that's his, you know, when the story eventually does get published, right. Which is not a spoiler alert because this is history and people know this got published. His reaction towards the end, and I won't say exactly what it was, but his reaction to the published piece, I loved so much. It's just a brilliant, brilliant piece of acting from Stanley Tucci. But this is the thing you mentioned. It's his career role. Well, look, this was Rachel McAdams' career role, her best role ever.
Undoubtedly.
Liev Schreiber's career role. I'm trying to write the Liev.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Liev Schreiber, have you seen Goon?
Oh.
Because he was pretty good in that.
Goon.
Yeah.
Didn't make that one. Didn't catch that one.
Okay. Throw that one on the old torrent queue. Wait, I mean.
I'm sorry. I should have looked up his IMDb before I started making these declarative statements. He was Sabretooth in the X-Men Origins Wolverine film. What? Okay. Well, this was his second best role.
You stand corrected.
But no, this is the thing about Liev Schreiber. And he's getting lost in a mix of amazing roles. Even, I don't even know how to say his name. Brian James D'Arcy? D'Arcy? I never. He
Don't know.
Yeah. Well, he's the other guy in the Spotlight team that you just don't know the name of.
The guy with the mustache.
He's awesome. I'm a proponent of guys with mustaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think a man with a mustache has never won an Oscar, so I'm looking forward to that.
Wow.
Hopefully,
you mean Tom Selleck has never won an Oscar?
Yeah. No, Tom Selleck is no, he has not. Just verbal berating from Rosie O'Donnell. So this is the thing about Liev, and this is why I feel like he's the underdog here, and I want to keep mentioning how good his role is because he had an opportunity with the way the script is to be very showy, and he plays it so understated and perfectly. Oof. It is like spot on how that role should be, like spot on.
Yeah, and I feel like he's such a good counterbalance to Ruffalo's on the edge character and Keaton, who flies off the handle a couple times.
Oh man, Keaton! This is the thing about Keaton. He plays this role perfectly, and from what I understand, the guy in real life he's portraying, Walter Robbie Robertson, they call him Robbie. He did the perfect like go up to your friend at the bar, be like, "Hey, just catch the Red Sox game, you know? Like, how's it going?
Wow.
Great. Hey, so tell me, did you represent the Catholic priests? He's the perfect guy at being chummy, you know, friendly, and then asking these direct questions, you know?
There were so many great scenes like that. Where
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Michael Keaton, I'm so happy I can get behind him here in his Oscar campaign, because I badly wanted him to win for Birdman, even though I didn't think Birdman was great. I still think he deserved an Oscar for it, and Eddie Redmayne did not. But thankfully,
What was the Redmayne movie? What was he in?
He was in The Theory of Everything. He played Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Which I could see that. I could put me in a wheelchair. I could put that performance in my sleep. By the way, I could do that in a heartbeat. So easy. All you need is a robot to do your lines for you. So there you go.
Hey, so I was gonna ask. What about John Slattery?
Yeah,
he plays
Roger Sterling.
He plays Roger Sterling.
I knew it. I knew that joke was coming. I love it. I love it because the Roger Sterling character is almost ubiquitous. Like, there's someone like that everywhere. Like, in every office in every situation, there's a Roger Sterling-like character. And I'm sure there was at the Globe, and John Slattery is there to play it. Whether that's actually Roger Sterling or whether that's Iron Man's father, Howard Stark. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing. Slattery shows up on set and just does Slattery, and it's amazing.
Oh, and he kills it every time. He nails does. It.
That's the thing. So. He's amazing at it. He's so good. He's so good.
He's like that left-handed reliever that you bring in for one batter.
Seriously, though. And you know you're going to get a strikeout. He's going to strike him out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not or he's going to ground into a double play. So,
So I think this is worth what we're talking about. So we've got Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, Lee Schreiber, Stanley Tucci, Rachel McAdams, the guy with the mustache, John Slattery. Mm-hmm. We have a Billy Crudup, however you say his name, as this slimy but very conflicted attorney in just a few scenes, and he's, I think, amazing in what he does. He communicates it so well, and he had a really like his performance in the few scenes he was in is particularly layered, because at first you think like, oh, he's just sleazeball attorney.
Right.
But then as you get to learn his character, you realize why he is the way he is, and you start to not necessarily empathize, but be like, oh, okay, there's more.
It's more complicated.
Yes, it's way more complicated.
Yeah, on face value, he's just the counter to Stanley Tucci's, other more heartfelt lawyer. He's kind of like the face.
Yeah, totally. I'm even going to go as far as to say, and I have no idea what the character or actor's name is, but Michael Keaton has an attorney friend he goes golfing with that becomes a reluctant source in all of this. Even that guy's performance, I thought, was really powerful. I felt like the pain and the anguish of like, and you know, he didn't play a great person in the movie.
No, tough role. Definitely a tough role. And I've seen that guy. His name is Jamie Sheridan. Oh, okay. He's been in a million things. His
did
character
you recall
actor,
that, or did you have to look that up?
No, I had to look it up. Okay, but I remember he was the vice president in Homeland.
Oh,
and I'm an avid Homeland watcher. Mm. So, yeah, big fan of Jamie Sheridan. Yeah. Oh, he was fantastic in his little part. So,
no, he is so good.
You know, it's so important in a movie like this where everyone is believable, or else, you know, it takes you out of it.
It's true.
And there's so many little parts where I think, is that just a regular person off the street, or are they an actor?
Or are they an actor? like the victims they're talking to.
Yes,
they're
absolutely.
So good. And you're like, are these, did they get real victims? Of course not. But like, you feel like it could be.
Yes. How about the lady that plays Rachel McAdams' mother or grandmother, whatever she is?
Yeah.
I was like, wow, is that lady
just
a normal person?
Because that lady's not, it's not, she's not like going to casting calls and auditions, like, you know?
I don't think so.
No way.
Yeah.
It really, really nailed this casting. Now, what's funny about this movie is that I went in having heard that this was getting the Oscar pub, that this was like the best picture front runner in a year that hasn't been particularly great for, like, you know, those prestige films.
Right.
The thing about Oscar front runners is they usually, like, they have that whole prestige film feel like 12 Years a Slave or any of those. You know, like, there's a certain feel to them. Mm-hmm. This movie does not feel like a prestige film. It's a nuts and bolts journalism movie.
That's what I respected about it. It's not grandiose.
Nope.
It's not looking for awards. It's not trying to pat itself on the back.
No.
You don't have anyone that's going over the top with their performance.
You know what it did? I was so grateful for this. And like, at the very end of the film, they didn't do the here's the picture of the actor, here's the picture of the person in real life.
Oh, man.
which, now, don't get me wrong, I loved Argo, and I love my man, director Ben Affleck. And in Argo, I liked it when they did that, because it was like, oh, wow, they really look like the people. Like, that's kind of cool.
Exactly.
Like, in Spotlight, this isn't about the journalists. That's not, you know, it would have been very in very poor taste to be like, hey, they look alike, you know, like,
right? Oh yeah,
and they God, also they didn't like they had like apparently the director had a title card at the end of the film that mentions them winning the Pulitzer Prize for this story.
Oh, okay,
but they asked the real life people asked for that to be taken off because they didn't want it to be about them.
Wow,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned those title cards because I don't know if we should say exactly what happens, but there's a series of title cards that play at the very end, at the conclusion, and as they're going through, people were laughing in my theater.
No.
Yeah. And I think they were laughing not because it was funny, it's just the absurdity of it. And they just couldn't deal with it, so they started to laugh. And I was just like, wow, that's an interesting reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is it, can we, I don't think, is it spoiler to say what?
Should we probably not. Okay. Yeah, it's probably not a spoiler.
So but. Obviously we know the story breaks in Boston and as we mentioned earlier, it becomes a worldwide scandal. And at the end, they end up listing all the cities in which there have been molestations reported. And it's essentially like a forever list. And they keep showing cities.
It goes on and on and
after
on.
After cities. What I'm doing there is looking for like when the S's come up to make sure Sacramento isn't on there. I was like, please.
Oh, it was on there. It was definitely on there.
What's funny is I also looked for Salt Lake because it's not too far from the SA in Sacramento.
But, yeah.
But I don't know. It went too quickly for me to even see because there's so many other cities to get to. I was going to look it up and see if it was on the list because I was curious. I still don't know if it was.
We got to go back and watch it
I can't imagine Los Angeles was though. There's just.
Oh, it certainly was. Yeah. It certainly was.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, like, just to go into the whole story, I don't think we've really just touched on the acting.
Yeah,
but
I actually want to get into the story because there's a couple things I want to mention.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, first off, this is something that I thought was done really, really well. And so many movies have failed in the past. But when you have a subject matter that's as horrific as child molestation and rape, there's many different ways you can approach it. And this movie struck the perfect balance of telling you just enough for you to be completely horrified and disgusted. Like, they hold nothing back, right? But it doesn't go gratuitous. And it doesn't go, like, so over the top that you're kind of like, okay, like,
right.
You keep going over and over again in detail, like, graphic detail that it almost, like, kind of ruins the experience. But like, I'm more grateful that they didn't shy away. Like, they let the victims explain what happened, and you're sitting there thinking, this is real life. This actually happened to these people. Like,
right.
I thought that was marvelously handled.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, the actors that were portraying the victims, the turmoil, the pain, the anguish that they were exhibiting it was unreal.
What's crazy is when the journalists are speaking to them and taking the notes, you're waiting for them to embrace the victim, like give them a hug, say it's going to be okay, embrace them, and they don't. And that was the most effective way to show how alone these people are in their anguish.
Right.
You know, like the journalists are there to record it, to report it, but they're not there to give them solace necessarily.
Because they can't, honestly.
Well, and they can't. But for me, it was an effective way of showing, like, you know, these people, the people that they would be going to for comfort are the people who are committing the crime. Like, these people have been alone since they were kids, since they had these incidents happen to them, right? And like, seeing these moments of them, like, describing it and then breaking down, and the journalist just kind of sitting there and writing, it's powerful stuff.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And you like you said, you want to see them comforted, but you realize these people are doing a job, and it's more important.
And they haven't been comforted in decades.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. It's just to put yourself in their shoes for a second, I couldn't even imagine.
No,
I couldn't even imagine. They talk about how the victims are lucky to be alive, not even to be a productive member of society. Yeah. They're just lucky to be alive. Man,
yeah,
it's really heavy stuff.
It is. It not would be such a difficult subject matter to both write and direct and act. Really.
Oh, gosh.
But that's what made this movie so special to me. And that's why, to me, it's the best movie I've seen of the year so far. And so, balls in your court, J.J. Abrams. but like, it really is the best movie I've seen of the year because it's really powerful. It's directed with a very steady hand. The directing mm-hmm. isn't showy. It doesn't get in the way of the story. It lets the story yeah. unfold. The acting, like we've mentioned, is amazing. And so the director I wanted to bring up, Tom McCarthy, who is a familiar face. He was a reporter for the Baltimore Sun, portrayed a reporter for the Baltimore Sun in the last scene of The Wire last season. But this is what's crazy. If you look at his filmography, he's known mostly for directing the indie darling Station Agent, Peter Dinklage.
Oh, wow.
Win-win yes. with Paul Giamatti.
Okay.
And then he also is the writer, like the sole writer for Million Dollar Arm.
Wow.
He's the screen. He wrote the screenplay for Million Dollar Arm.
Jeez, what a diverse career he has. It's crazy.
And look,
all over the place.
Anyone who's listened to any of the David Aaron podcasts, they would know we love Million Dollar Arm. We are on Million Dollar Arm Island.
Always, 100%. I will back Million Dollar Arm until I die.
I wish there was a sequel. Oh, really?
Oh yeah, give me a sequel. You know what, I'd like to see it actually flipped around. I'd like to see a failed American baseball player go to India and learn how to play cricket.
Well, or would you watch Metaworld please play basketball in China? Or
oh yes, give it to me. I want to see it.
I want to see Stephon Marbury win that MVP or whatever he got in China. That's what I want to see. Anyway, so he wrote Million Dollar Arm, and he was also one of the primary writers on Up, the Pixar film. My favorite Pixar film, the one I consider a masterpiece. He was one of the writers on Up. Now this is
so. If there's anyone in Hollywood that you respect, it's this guy.
Well, he's got until his most recent film before Spotlight, The Cobbler with Adam Sandler.
Oh
yeah. So this is what's crazy. Like,
whoa.
Think about this. This guy's done great independent films, both directed and wrote, and you know, combo write direct. He's acted in several like, you know, prestige things. He's very accomplished. He directs The Cobbler with Adam Sandler, a movie that was so bad that the distributor didn't even release it fully in theaters and went straight to Netflix because it was getting so terribly reviewed. I listened to Tom McCarthy on a podcast a couple weeks ago mention how they had just started production on Spotlight. When the initial reviews, I think it screened first, it premiered at like a film festival when it first premiered to a you know, a public audience. And mm-hmm. And he said people started texting him. Some friends are just like, hey, heads up, it's not sounding good. Like the reaction. And he said that they were just starting Spotlight. And then all of a sudden there's just the onslaught of negative feedback. And for this guy who's got, you know, a fairly impressive IMDb resume.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he has not had a stinker like this, right? And he said
that's
that
crazy.
He took a couple days to be super angry about it and to probably just like mope, I imagine. And then he said, and then that was it. He stopped thinking about it, moved on. He had Spotlight to make. But it makes me feel like with Spielberg, and we mentioned this in the Spielberg pod, that he made like Jaws, like mm-hmm. E.T., 1941 mm-hmm. and then like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and then Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? And so 1941 is this weird bomb in the middle of his classics, yeah. right? And
I almost, that's his throat clear.
Yeah, exactly. It's for him to stop, take a poop, and then keep going, right? Like seriously, I feel like The Cobbler, I feel like he just every bit of crappiness he just put into this Adam Sandler awful Adam
that's
Sandler
crazy.
Film. And then he goes on to make Spotlight, and he makes a near perfect film. Like
that's wild, man.
Yeah, how do you go from that? The Cobbler. Here's the Spotlight.
Wow. So if he wouldn't, you know, it makes you think. What if he wasn't attached to Spotlight before Cobbler came out?
Yeah.
Would he even get the opportunity to make it?
Well, yeah. Wow. And the good news is this is a script he had written and had been on the blacklist, you know, script blacklist and been in development hell. So it was kind of his, it was his thing, right? It was just about.
Oh, so it was his baby.
It was his baby. Okay. So he wasn't going to lose it. But that's an interesting point about timing of when people, because great directors have made very bad movies.
Right. I think it was, I want to say it was Jon Favreau who said he was one movie away, mm-hmm. one bomb away from never directing yep. again.
Isn't that amazing?
It's wild, man.
Because he had directed. He had directed Zathura?
Yes, exactly. It was right after that.
And then he had Elf.
Right. Yeah. And then from that, didn't he do Iron Man right after that?
Yeah.
I think, or something.
Yeah. So
yeah, That's Hollywood for you, man.
Totally. No, that's amazing. That's the thing about the and you know as an aspiring filmmaker, aspiring is the wrong word. As a filmmaker yourself, that like
I aspire to get paid one day.
Talent, like being talent, like really, really, really talented, is about maybe 20 or 30% of it, and then just being lucky is 70% of it. It's insane how much relies on being in the right place at the right time and knowing the right people. It's unfortunate
it sure does.
That's the case, but anyway. So this is Tom McCarthy. This is his, this is his baby. He's able to make it like he wants it. And I'm just so grateful that he didn't allow his psyche to be broken from all. I mean, The Cobbler was a historically poorly reviewed film. So, I'm convinced. I have theories on this stuff that all of the positive power of good filmmaking went into Spotlight.
Right. He was saving it up. Yeah. You know, the direction of the movie is, I mean, it's fine. It's great. But there aren't really,
it's
there's
not
really
the hallmark.
No bad moments. Yeah. I would say the only thing that I really had an issue with, and it's just a stupid minor thing, but any movie where someone works at a newspaper, there's an obligatory printing press scene.
Oh, okay.
There's a sequence where you have to go inside the printing press and see the paper going through the machine.
Yeah.
And it's without fail.
Yeah.
And it's just such a cliche that anytime that there's a newspaper movie, I look for that scene and I know it's coming. But yeah, other than that, I mean, he did a great job. It's just a stupid little thing that I have.
We should, if we ever do a film together about newspapers, we should have that scene. And as soon as it cuts to the printing, let's jam the printer with an iPad. Just stop the printer and be like, nah, we're going to go digital. We're just going to go iPad only.
I think the only movie they didn't do that in was Shattered Glass with the one and only Hayden Christensen.
Oh, well, Glass is, I mean, it's coarse and rough and it gets everywhere. Oh, gosh.
Is there any way to get him on the podcast?
Hayden? Oh, he's very available.
Yeah,
he's very. If we told him that we were doing a series of tribute episodes on his work, I think he would join. I think he'd jump on. Yeah,
he seems like a nice enough guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. He could at least act like he likes being on the pod. You know?
I don't think he could pull that off.
No, definitely not.
Oh, can we talk go back for one thing?
Yes, please.
How great was it that the actors didn't do the over the top Boston accent, the Southie accent?
Michael
Keaton, love Good Will Hunting, but
yeah, I know. And those, and they're supposedly Boston natives, right? Or well, at least
right, yeah.
So, yeah, whatever. This is the thing about Boston movies, especially. I would prefer if people didn't even attempt the accent. Tell me you're in Boston, talk like everyone else. I'm okay with that because it can become distracting when you're not nailing the Boston accent. It gets too close to other Eastern Seaboard accents that you fall into the trap of Jack Nicholson in The Departed.
Right, and I feel like what was the town? Okay, when Jeremy Renner's doing his Boston accent,
yeah.
I feel like oh boy, you're taking me out of every scene there, buddy.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Tone it back just a bit.
Which is it's actually funny you say that because Bill Simmons does reference Jeremy Renner as having one of the better doing one of the better Boston accents for people not from Boston.
That's interesting.
Because he's from Sacramento. He's from like Modesto or something.
Is he really?
Yeah.
He's one of the ones that got out, huh?
Yeah.
You and Jeremy Renner.
Despite our best efforts, we try to keep him in the orange fields, but no. Or the orange groves. I don't know what they are. I strongly recommend this film. I really think people need to go see this. It's very watchable. It's not one of those like stomach turning, like, you know. I actually really like the movie, and I've referenced it earlier, 12 Years a Slave. I was about to say 13 Years a Slave, but that wouldn't be right.
That's a sequel.
Let's not oversell this. no, but like 12 Years a Slave, I think is a very important film. It was a well-made film. I'm going to take that back. It was well-acted. The directing was okay. But it's a movie that was like really, really tough to watch because of content, and that's the idea. Slavery, I imagine, was just one of the most horrific things ever. It would be very tough to see. But it actually made it a difficult movie watching experience as well. This is not the case with Spotlight. They tell you just enough for you to know you should be outraged. But it's an enjoyable film that is ultimately, I want to say, triumphant. The last scene is really powerful. It's really incredible stuff.
And it's a movie where it's so dialogue heavy. I mean,
yeah.
just about every scene, there's just chunks of dialogue being spewed out. Mm-hmm. And these, to their credit, all these actors pull it off. And they did such a great job. On the power of their performances alone, I'd go back and see it. But totally. Beyond that, I think it's a movie you have to watch twice.
So who are you taking? Who are you taking in the award categories for Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, and then Best Supporting? I guess I think Rachel McAdams gets nominated no matter what.
She has
Best Supporting Actress.
She has.
She's
to.
Amazing.
She's gonna get nominated. I hope she wins.
So the men is where it's crowded because there's a lot of male roles. So who do you pick as your best actor nom and Best Supporting Actor nom?
For me, I would say Michael Keaton would be the best actor, just because he's kind of introduced as the lead.
Yeah.
He kind of takes a backseat in the second half of the film.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of his, because he's so close, his character is so close to the situation, and, you know, we find out things about him and his past and just how ingrained he was in the whole story as well, that he's maybe probably the lead. And I hope he wins.
Me too.
But yeah, I think that Liev Schreiber and Mark Ruffalo both deserve nominations. Stanley Tucci as well. I don't think that there's ever been a movie that had three supporting actors nominated.
No,
so,
I don't think so.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like it's the whole. I'm not sure if you followed the National League Cy Young award this year, but
no.
The two of the nominees were Dodgers. And they both lost. Yeah. So I feel like they canceled each other out. So we might have a situation like that here.
Was it Kershaw and who?
It was Kershaw and Zach Greinke.
Oh, Greinke, right. Okay.
And they both lost to the Cub. So.
Oh, jeez. Man,
yeah.
L.A.
Tough year.
Always down on luck. Kobe retiring.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I was actually hoping to hijack this pod and turn it into a top five Kobe moment.
Kobe. A memorial Kobe pod.
In memoriam of Kobe's career. In memoriam of Kobe's jump shot.
Now, you're a Laker fan. Tell me, you already had your memoriam for Kobe's career in 2011, right? Like,
well, yeah. So,
like,
for
this
me...
This has been inevitable, right? Like,
yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's one of those moments where it's just like, it has to be done. It's time. It was time. It was probably time last year.
Was the nail in the coffin,
man,
when he signed that extension, sealing the
of
fate?
Course of course, it was
the sealing the fate of. There's no chance he's going to win another championship.
Of course it was, and I don't begrudge him.
No,
you
no.
know he. There was too many amazing moments.
Yeah, no, he earned
that
every
were
penny
directly,
of that.
He was directly responsible for. So
yeah, no. I really do actually love athletes, and of course it's not my team, so it doesn't affect me as much. But like, I was really happy he did sign that extension. Not because it took the Lakers out of contention, but because, look, I want them to – he should take as much money as he possibly can from the bus or any owner family, because he deserves every penny of that. Like,
yeah, you know, he earned it. And if it weren't for basketball reasons, he would have won another NBA championship.
Like, you know, he's not obligated to be a good guy like Dirk Nowitzki and take a big pay cut, right? Like,
how many rings does Dirk have again?
Oh,
is it five? Is it five?
Six. He did six. Right? He was like Jordan,
oh,
right?
Wow. Oh,
okay. He was in the Bulls team. No.
He's behind Luke Longley.
How great was Dirk's one championship, though?
It was pretty fantastic.
We were all cheering for Dallas, right? I mean, come on.
Well.
No, you were not.
Not all of us.
You were not cheering for Miami. Nonsense. Quit that. I know how much you love Bosch, but please.
It's sad to see Kobe go, but it's time. And I will be keeping an eye on StubHub because I got to see him one last time.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Apparently prices for tickets have just
skyrocketed,
doubled for nosebleeds. So
I can imagine.
Yeah.
All over the country, I bet that,
Oh, yeah.
Now that he's going to get the Jeter farewell tour.
Yeah, well, I might just drive up to Arco Arena, is it? Is it still called Arco?
Yeah, that's, yep. Yes, it is. You betcha. Still Arco Arena.
All right.
You know what's funny? There was a post. It might have been just, I don't know if it was an actual article. It might have been a series of tweets from the Sacktown Royalty Kings blog, you know, that's like got a lot of activity. And the question was about how Sacramento as a community should, how are they going to react to the next? It's like in January, February is the last Laker game in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And look, he's gonna get an enormous standing ovation at in Sacramento. So
I find that hard to believe, but
well, we're still gonna poison his steak.
exactly.
But we'll clap.
Oh man, so many good moments. I mean, yeah. I honestly can't believe it's over. It's kind of surreal. It makes me feel old. I'll tell you that right
sure.
now.
Sure.
I feel old. I mean, it had to be done. Classy way to announce it too. Players Tribune.
Yeah.
With a poem.
Because look, Kobe out there. I love this Players Tribune, by the way. I love it so much.
Not one single word has been typed by a player or written
not
by a player,
a single
by the way.
Word. Not no. a single word.
No.
Oh my gosh. I love that it's putting the journalists that are kind of upset that, you know, that, or whatever, that they're kind of using their own medium. Those same journalists are the ghostwriters writing the stories.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, exactly. No kidding.
What was I going to say? I don't even remember, but anyway,
speaking of journalism,
Spotlight, go see it.
Yeah.
Great movie. Great flick. Great flick.
Oh, one thing I wanted to mention about this movie, it's so refreshing that there's a movie made for adults that's actually in the theaters. I feel like...
What do you mean by that? Like you didn't...
Okay.
You're upset that it didn't have comic relief, or you're happy it didn't have a comic relief character?
Like comic relief or a superhero tucked in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Liev Schreiber revising his role as Sabretooth.
Yeah.
I feel like the adult movie has just been totally marginalized. Mm. If you look back to the 90s, you know, that's when I watched all my favorite movies. There were so many movies made for adult moviegoers.
Yeah.
Well, and you just don't see it as much anymore. It's really unfortunate.
The unit economics in movies don't allow for it. That's what it is.
Right.
We're not getting Rain Man anymore, right? Like,
no.
Like mm-hmm. Rain Man made a ton of money. And then, of course, all the Academy Awards. Rain Man doesn't make $30 million in its domestic like gross today, right? Like it's
right.
It's crazy.
No, it would never happen, and that's why you know you have all these great TV series because all the great writers are now writing for TV, and that's been going on for the past 10 years or whatever in this new golden age.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because I personally don't. There's nothing that I more and there's no media that I consume that I enjoy more than actually going to a movie theater to watch it.
Absolutely.
So I mean, so TV's one thing; it's fine, but I just want to go to that movie theater and
absolutely
be entertained for 2.5 hours or whatever it is.
Absolutely. You know, no better way to go to that theater than with a movie pass subscription for only $29.99.
Nice segue.
I realized I hadn't mentioned it yet. It'll be in the show notes. But seriously, subscribe to movie pass. That's what pays.
What's the code for this episode?
That's the promo code.
Yeah.
The
Kobe's bad knees.
No. It's little children. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I know. I regret that already.
Ouch.
Gosh.
Ouch.
I'm gonna need to edit.
You owe me one Hail Mary.
Do I need to edit that out? No, I'm too.
Yeah.
I can't. No, I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna leave it. I'm gonna let people know what a monster I am.
Yes. On the level of cardinal law.
Yeah. Or what's the name of the pastor that kicks it all off? Griggs? It's not Grigson. I don't remember. It's the most famous name
remember.
Of all of them. I was going to use his name as the promo code, but I can't remember.
Griggerson or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, just type that in. Type that in.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I liked how they portrayed the cardinal there.
Yeah.
He was. He was like a king.
I was, you know what? I was a little enchanted by him a little bit.
Well, I liked his diamond studded cross.
Oh, I know.
He looked like a rapper.
Oh, I know. Just delightful.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that they made him do a sit down meeting where like not a single word was spoken about the story or the scandal, but all of the body language was, we're doing this so you know the unwritten rule of don't do this. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
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 It's pretty scary.
And
you see, they go over when they're talking to, especially to the lawyers and the victims and stuff. You see how the church, the Catholic Church, operates like a corporation, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are the losses we can tolerate. And it's really so scummy.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate and it's sad to see, but apparently that's the reality.
The other thing that was unfortunate is how this is now colored what was otherwise a delightful experience touring the Vatican.
Right.
Now I had to go back through Facebook and just delete a whole bunch of photos of me. I can't have people know that I was there.
No kidding, man. I'm not a Catholic. No, I grew up extremely religious, Protestant. Yeah. I would say still kind are. Of evangelical, yeah. but I am not religious at all. Yeah. My wife, on the other hand, she's Catholic. She grew up Catholic. Comes from a very strong Catholic background.
Is she actively Catholic?
Lapsed? Not so much anymore. Okay. But it's still the ties are still there. She went to Catholic school. Sure. And so when we went to the Vatican, it's like, I don't even believe this stuff, but it's pretty powerful, man.
No, it's very impressive.
It's pretty powerful. So and the Vatican was, I hate to say it, it was pretty cool.
No, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thankfully, Vatican's in Rome, and this stuff happened in Boston, so we can,
You can separate the two.
Yeah, yeah. I mentioned it earlier before the pod. I did have to take down my my cardboard cutout of Pope Francis that's in my office.
Smart. Yeah.
Well, that's really, I didn't take it down. I just turned him around so he's facing the wall.
It's a symbolism for what they did to all the little kids.
Yeah, turn their backs.
They turned their backs on.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Oh, I will quickly devolve into some pretty off-color jokes here if I don't.
If you think about it, these people were scum. They were absolutely animals. They were monsters.
Oh, complete monsters. Not even scum. Yeah. Scum is totally understating it. I mean, these are criminals and totally. Horrific monsters. The idea that – and not just the people committing the acts – you know, because of course they're horrific monsters, but the people knowing they committed the acts and allowed them to continue practicing and commit more and just move them around and allow it to continue to happen. How easy would it have been for them to completely strip them of all their, you know, pastoral or priestly, whatever, you know, credentials and completely exile them. But no, they allowed them to continue committing these crimes. That's what's so crazy.
It's a slap in the face. And how about you turn them over to the authorities?
Yeah. How about that? Well, the opening scene is really powerful because it's about that. There's a flashback scene, or you know, from early 30 years back or whatever, about how the turning in the authorities, how that whole system worked. Very fascinating.
Exactly, it perfectly sets the tone for the entire movie.
Great opening scene. Yeah, but
there's one scene, just a little snippet where a reporter actually meets one of the priests. I don't want to say what happens exactly, but. Once it happens, you just, when the scene is over, your jaw's dropped.
Yeah.
Because it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's all I got to say on Spotlight. Obviously there's effusive praise here being heaped on it. So, seriously, go see it. It's likely going to win Best Picture, and it should. It's probably it's the best picture I've seen this year. It's the best movie I've seen.
It's right up there for me.
So well done. So anyway, like I said, on later this week, we'll be doing Pixar Part 2 with Skylar and Brian Mortensen. And then also we're going to be doing a Pado Creed. I did see Creed over the weekend in addition to Good Dinosaur.
Wait, the band or the movie?
Oh, no, it was a concert. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a concert DVD done at Scorsese, actually.
Did you have your arms wide open for that?
That's what's been the worst thing, telling people to go see Creed is the immediate response and joke. Of like the band, I'm like, I'm gonna stop recommending this movie because I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. that Creed. Maybe I'll spare my immediate opinion in it because it deserves an entire podcast. So we'll be doing that down the line. I recommend.
Can you just give me a quick rundown of what you thought of the other six Rocky movies?
Yes, you have five great films and one very very bad one. So there you go. That's my I love the Rocky franchise. I'm an unabashed supporter. So again, shout out to our sponsors, MoviePass, as well as DawnOfTheThread.com. They're running some sweet Cyber Monday deals. I have no idea if that's actually true.
It is true. 30% off.
Oh, are you serious? But it's not going to be Monday by the time they hear this. Do you know how long those deals are running? Okay. I tell you what. You email us at bravelittlepod.com. We will petition to our friends at Dawn of the Thread and see if maybe we can get you that 30% deal. I'm going to tell you right now, this is absolutely not a promise.
And there will be no emails sent, no text messages.
How about this? If you go and see Spotlight, or if you already have, But if you go and see Spotlight, email us that you've seen it, and we'll see if we can get you 30% off at downtothethread.com.
But I'm going to need a ticket stub. So yes, hold on picture to that ticket stub.
I'm serious here. Picture of a ticket stub that you saw Spotlight will get you 30% off at downtothethread.com. I'm going to need your brother's phone number. Maybe an email address, Twitter handle. I need to reach out to him.
I texted that to you earlier. I guess you didn't get it.
My wife, by the way, she played a – we have a company – soccer team.
Wait, you're married?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't say her name on the air for privacy reasons. No. She plays in a company soccer league. And she played a late night game. That's where I came just before we recorded the pod. And she was out there in her uniform, but they had to wear white. And she wore the white Brave Little Podcast t-shirt done by awesome. DonnaTheThread.com. So she's running out kicking around. You know, everyone can see this little toaster with the headphones and a mic. Loving it. Loving it. So,
yeah, we got to get those mass produced and get those in the hands of the listeners.
In all seriousness, I do have a bunch of people I do want to give them out as Christmas gifts. It's kind of my way to feed my ego, my egotistical Christmas gift. Here's a t-shirt in my pot. But no, seriously, there's been a tremendous demand. And I do have a lot of people I want to get these shirts to. So, we want to do, we're also going to run some other promotions and whatnot, and we'll mail out t-shirts to people that participate. So, we'll have to work on getting the bulk order in. But yeah, that's it for me. Did you have anything else you wanted to plug or talk about, Aaron?
No plugs for me. I will just say that, if you go to see Spotlight, you will be, very much entertained.
Yeah.
It's a must-see movie of this year, I'd say.
Yeah, it's great. All right. Well, that's it. We'll see you later on. We've got a lot of great episodes coming in. Thanks again, Aaron, for coming on. You've become a staple, a brave little staple on this podcast. So, well, you know, as we say,
hold on to your butts.
Bye.
Good night, man.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.